Day. Welcome to Pep Talks. I am Eddie Pepitone, and I am with today my co-host, Steve Lally.
I'm feeling full of pep, Eddie. How are you?
I'm good. I realized I wasn't talking into the mic. Good evening, or good day, or good twilight, or good dusk. That's the thing about podcasts, right? If people are listening,
it could be any time of day.
It could be any time of the day. I wonder if I should have a different voice for each time of the day, like morning. Like, by the way, what do you think of the morning radio when they're so energetic? Isn't that crazy? Shouldn't morning radio be like, good morning, we know that you are in the middle of trying to get the demons out of your soul? Because when I wake up, it's horrifying when I wake up. It's like, ah, no. Right. My first thoughts are in the morning, I'm going to wind up homeless. I'm going to die soon. And then it slowly gets better to I realize, you know, I will probably wind up in a sanitarium. I won't be homeless.
But it's so nice that it gets better for you.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, today I had a lot of anxiety. I woke up with anxiety, and welcome everybody. We're live on YouTube. And if you're just kind of clicking around YouTube and you found us, go fuck yourself. Go back to watching whatever you watch on YouTube. But I'm talking to the casual listener there. You know what I mean? The person who's like, oh, what's this?
That was informative. The way you did that.
Was it?
Very, yeah.
And I've been telling comedy audiences to go fuck them. So they like that. I don't know what it is about comedy audiences liking being abused. They know I'm kidding. They know I'm kidding, you know.
I would call you a social media influencer.
I don't think so. Not yet, you know. Yeah. I'd love to be and just really happy. Even though that's when you get all this scrutiny and all the trolls come out, isn't it? Yeah. All the trolls, like if you're quote unquote an influencer and you say something controversial, you get dogpiled by all the people who, you know, don't like what you said. And it's an insanity. But I'm at the level where I could say anything and people, it's just my fans.
It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you were an influencer, would you even be doing it? You would have someone else doing it for you.
Oh, maybe. Like, yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily like to go on social media because it leads me down a rabbit hole of self. Like, you know, I just start thinking, oh, is that funny? Was that, you know, who loves me? Who loves me?
Oh, it's like a fucking funhouse mirror. It's like a funhouse mirror when you know, you look in the funhouse mirror and it makes you look, you know, you don't look like that, but.
I have a trouble. You know what I realized? And I don't know how you are with this, but I have trouble compartmentalizing life. Like, in other words, I think there's a lot of people who could say, okay, I'm going on social media to do some work, to promote my stuff for an hour, and then I'm getting off and being my real person. I feel like everything is a part of, like, I feel like my social media posts will influence the rest of my day instead of it being very compartmentalized. How are you with that stuff?
It depends on the day. Sometimes I'm totally disconnected from it and I can go on and fiddle with it and get off. Mm-hmm. And some days I won't go on for days on it. Mm. And then I feel bad.
What do you feel bad about? That you're not promoting yourself?
Yeah. I feel bad that I'm not like engaging and promoting myself. But usually if I'm not on there, it's because I have real things happening and I have actual life. When I'm on there, it's because I've got nothing to do.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, you know.
Well, I mean, I don't really go on there recreationally. You know what I mean? A little bit, I guess. But I don't go on and like see what's going on Twitter. What's going on a little bit. Facebook, I started to get a little hooked in on. A little hooked on because I was like, oh, what is Rick Overton doing? Or what is this person doing? Or, oh, look at this argument. And this guy makes a good point. And this guy makes a good point. And it's
an abyss.
It's an abyss. Yeah. It's an abyss.
You know, because I got laid on Facebook. I got laid because of Facebook. That girl I met her on Facebook.
Facebook is very funny. It's like you filmed it.
It's a movie title. I got laid on Facebook. Yeah. We should pitch that. But no, now I'm on there thinking, man, maybe I could Now I'm scrolling through.
Using it as a dating site.
Wow, isn't that, that's a bad, that's a bad.
Well, impulse. Everybody's online dating now, aren't they? Tinder, Bumble, Booble, Nebuchadnezzar's. What would be funny names for dating sites? King Saul. King
Caligula. Saul. Caligula app. Caligula app.
King Saul titty fucking. I don't know.
Just that you go to the Old Testament.
Oh, yeah. For some reason, I'm going.
Dante's Inferno.
Dante Inferno. Hello. I'm Dante. Hello, I'm Dante. Welcome to Dante's Inferno. And welcome to Dante's Inferno dating website. Are you in, let's say, the first circle of hell, the second circle, third circle? Well, here at Dante's Inferno, we can take you to the ninth circle of hell, but quick. By the way, I listened to a podcast put out by the LA Times called Dirty John, and everybody's talking about this. Have you heard of this? Aaron, have you heard about it?
Yeah.
He's heard about it. You? You're not.
It's fucked up that you know something in pop culture that I don't know.
That's
really disturbing to me.
Someone told me about it, and it's about it's a very popular podcast. And again, it's about murder.
See, I'm not going to listen to that, dude.
You are correct, I think, because at first I was really hooked into it. I couldn't stop listening. It was six episodes, and they're about 45 minutes each or something. But by the end of it, I just felt like, ooh. I felt like, oh, God, that was a horrible story. Like,
that's how – the same way you feel listening to that podcast is how I feel when I watch episodes of Friends. When I watch episodes of Friends –
Well, that's the soul suck too.
Yeah.
Why do you feel that way with episodes of Friends? Just because of how – artificial it is.
I feel like.
By the way, I think that's why we also hate the internet. Is it's so artificial? Like you're on Facebook and you kind of have the illusion you're like having real nice chats with people, and you can. And definitely, I've had great little conversations with people on Facebook and funny little interact. But it's not real at some point, right? It's not a real relationship, and I think. That it always leaves people wanting more.
Yeah.
Right? Well, what was your point?
With the Friends thing?
Yeah, with Friends.
Okay, so when I watch Friends, I was making a kind of a half-kidding thing, but when I watch Friends, which I don't do, but one time I was sick and my roommate had the box set and I couldn't go anywhere and it was the only thing to watch, so I watched them. I just felt like not a man. I didn't feel like a man. There was something, some
funny.
Killer instinct about me that I just felt like a weasel after watching episodes of Friends because the men are all bumbling morons. I'm not sure. I don't know what the formula to that was, but it made me feel not good, you know. That's all I can say.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. That's funny. I just think it's because you're sitting there, and again, you know, television gives the illusion that you're interacting with society, and in a way you are, but if you're just with the TV, it leaves you just so goddamn empty, you know, if you don't have real life connections.
Did you ever
know?
See Videodrome? That reminds me of the movie.
No, I never did. Is that Cronenberg?
Cronenberg. And he sees a certain program and he starts to become part of it. Woods. And so I think the programs have different effects on us, you know, depending on who we are. Some people love Friends. I don't like it. I like Game of Thrones though, because I feel like I'm escaping into another world, you know, or Breaking Bad. You know, I felt like I was on methamphetamine. I couldn't stop watching it. I had to keep.
Right. I guess really good shows, and by good, meaning that you were transported by them because the world they create just hooks into some part of you and fascinates you and. It connects you, right?
It transports you somewhere.
It transports you, and you really give a shit about these characters somehow, like Walter White. And it's funny, I just saw Aaron Paul, who played Jesse in Breaking Bad. I saw him in another movie that was based on a novel by Nick Hornby, who wrote High Fidelity. And some other, this was called A Long Way Down. And the premise of it is that this guy, a disgraced TV talk show guy played by Pierce Bronson, is going to commit suicide at the top of a building on New Year's Eve. And as he's about to throw himself off, somebody else comes up to this very tall building to commit suicide. And then somebody else and somebody else. And Aaron Paul is one of the four, and they kind of gang together.
How was that?
It was okay. It wasn't great, but it had some good laughs in it, you know? And so, but what I was going to say about Aaron Paul is that it's tough to not think of him as Jesse, and all his mannerisms that he was doing to me were like stuff he did on Breaking Bad, because I got so into Breaking Bad and I got so into those characters.
You could only see him as Jesse Pinkman,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of strange.
That's a gift and a curse for actors. The gift right. being he was on maybe the best television show ever. The curse is that everybody sees him as Jesse, right. and it must be tough to break out of.
Yeah, but you got to be on Breaking Bad.
Yeah. By the way, everybody, welcome to Pep Talks, and we're just kind of riffing around like we always do. I just want you to know, I will be taping my special. I have a new special coming out. It's going to be an hour of Eddie Pepitone, and I'm working on putting that special together now, which I don't like doing, but I do it for you. You know, I do it for the masses, you know, the hoi polloi, the people in pain. I do it for the people in pain. That's you. I'm an artist, so my pain is alchemized into art. Whereas your pain just sits there, you know, and the only way you get rid of it is by either vacuuming
or watching Eddie
or watching me or Breaking Bad or, you know, whatever you.
That would be a good title. Elevate My Pain. You elevate your pain, basically. Right. Isn't that what you kind of do?
I alchemize my pain.
What does that mean, alchemize?
An alchemist is someone who takes
lead and turns it into gold, right?
Right. You take something and transform it into something else. That's what alchemy is.
I like that.
There's a great book called The Alchemist. It's a spiritual book. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. I forget who wrote it. Be taping my new special. I haven't named it yet. I'm going to come up with a name, me and the director, Steve Fine Arts, who directed my other Netflix special. And I have an album out called The Great Stillness. This will be, I guess, my third or fourth special, but second videotaped one, you know. And it'll be at the if you're in L.A., February 16th, that's when I'm taping it, at Dynasty Typewriter, the Hayworth Theater, Dynasty Typewriter, I think. And go to their website. I have an 8 o'clock and a 10 o'clock show. I'm taping my special. And I'm also going to be at Cobb's in San Francisco. January 22nd as part of the San Francisco Sketch Fest on Will Durst's show. And he's a real political comedian.
Oh, cool.
And real funny. And I'll be ranting about politics, about the fact. And this is just FYI, if you don't know, the American Empire is over. And we're not in a Great Depression yet, but it will be bad. And I know that's depressing to say. I know it's something you don't want to hear, but it should kind of seep into your consciousness somewhat, because I think people are going to be stunned by the collapse. Like, we haven't completely collapsed, even though me and you were talking about how half the country, it's just so yeah. bad, right? Well, you've traveled a little bit more than me to really shitty air. What's your impression?
I think there's a bigger left out there. Then
that's why they were saying that Sanders could have beat Trump.
I was in.
They didn't want to vote for Hillary because the Clintons.
But the media was telling us one thing. But when I go travel, and when I in 2016 when I was touring, I went to a place called Ruskin, Florida.
Mm.
Ruskin.
Do you recommend Ruskin for people?
If you go to that one venue I was at, I don't know. It's one exit off a freeway. I don't know. Other than the venue, I didn't spend any time there.
Okay.
But when I talked about politics, the promoter told me, don't mention Trump. It's a Trump area.
Okay.
And so I don't listen anyway. I went and started talking about politics. And I said I voted for – I was a Bernie Sanders supporter. And they cheered.
That's great.
So I think there's a left out there Bernie we're not supposed to know about.
What?
I think there's a left out there we're not supposed to know about.
Well, you say the news won't tell you that, but the mainstream news won't tell you because they're co-opted by money, and Sanders has some good stuff to say about being a Democrat socialist.
Well, he stands up for the poor and against the war, and they're not gonna.
Does he? Some people now are finally, talking about the military incursions. Man, I was just telling Steve that I watched the movie Vice, written by Adam McKay, directed by Adam McKay, who's a comedian, which I love. I love because I want to, there's Jimmy Dore, who's a comic, who's become very political. I think you're political, I'm political. I think we need more fucking comedians to be, really fucking passionate about changing the power structure. And when I talk about that, there's a bunch of people who are like, how about you stick to comedy, asshole? Like, that.
Who's can you give me a, you don't want to name names.
Who says that?
Yeah.
No, just a lot of average. The average person will be like, look, I prefer, like the average Joe who doesn't think, you know what I mean?
Oh, you don't mean.
Well, also to be political as a comedian, you have to be interesting. You should be funny. It was kind of wild. Here's a review of Vice. I gave it a 7, but for the message, I gave it a nice 9.5. It just shows how. It shows how corrupt it was to go into the Mideast. And really, people have called our invasion of Iraq and our invasion of Afghanistan, the perpetual wars that are going on, it's the collapse of the American empire. Because what happens is you spend all these trillions and trillions, trillions of dollars on wars, enriching, and this is what the movie showed. Cheney was the CEO of Halliburton, just and NBR, which is NBR or KBR, Kellogg Brand Root, which is another military contract, and it enriches. War is a business, or war is a racket, as Smedley Butler said. You ever read that great speech?
Oh, he was Smedley Butler was the guy who was trying to. Do a coup on Roosevelt, wasn't he? Wasn't he the guy?
I don't know about that, but he was an outspoken military guy. He was from the military, and he just talked about how I've led invasions into. He was like a reformed, aggressive guy. Like he was like, this is, I go into these countries and I lead these invasions, and all it does, it leads to death. And it leads to enrichment
profit.
Of very few.
Right.
But what was amazing about Vice too, the original point was that the reason why the American empire, partly that it's collapsing, is that we put all this money into war and no money into
infrastructure,
human beings and the country infrastructure, education and, it's just hard. And now with, the orange imbecile in there and his band. I mean, they're just raping everything. And also I saw – and I did see this on Facebook because it was shared by John Fugelsang. It was great. Fugelsang shared this thing, 15 ways. It was an article in The Intelligencer, 15 ways that Trump has hurt the working man, because Trump's whole thing is like, I care about the little guy. And he has denied overtime for people, taking lots of money out of their pockets. He doesn't give a shit about the government workers being out of work right now. Just on and on and on what Trump has done to the working man while telling them that he really cares about them. You know what I mean? So it is a funhouse mirror thing. And Vice was incredible to see Christian Bale play Chaney, which was awesome. And, you know, I'm amazed how these guys put on weight, like doing that Robert De Niro thing that he did in Ranger. But, like,
he really transformed.
Put on all this weight. You know, it's a puffy face. He just looked like Chaney. It was a great fucking portrayal of Chaney. And Carell was really good as Rumsfeld. They kept it. You know what I realized? One of the secrets, because I like to act, and one of the secrets to acting is in on film particularly is to keep it tight and, you
understated.
Know, simple, understated. Like, right. They were such under, Carell particularly as Rumsfeld was really understated and good, you know. Rockwell, Sam Rockwell.
Played George Bush, right?
Yeah, that was good.
Oh, man.
Anyway, I recommend it. You know, some parts of it are not great. The way he has this, as a matter of fact, it's a guy from Breaking Bad, Jesse Plemons, who played a character in Breaking Bad, and he narrates kind of like he fills in all these blanks. It was one of those movies where I guess McKay thought he needed a narrator,
voiceover, right?
A voiceover, yeah. But yeah, that was a good movie.
Wouldn't have Chaney's been there since Nixon, right? Wasn't he? Didn't he work for Nixon?
Yes.
I think he did, yeah.
Yes, and they just show how he kind of just worked his way up. He went from being kind of a drunk fuck-up to, you know, being a good stooge for all these. He was Donald Rumsfeld's intern. That's how he started. But we have a lot of ads and phone calls. Not a lot, but a couple. Let's start. How about Steve?
I'll start it off.
One of our first commercials, MacBook Air, getting a big sponsor.
So
on
exciting
here.
to be shilling MacBook Air. Mm-hmm. MacBook Air is the world's first and most beloved Apple laptop. And in 2019, Apple's made big changes that they are sure you are going to love. The 2019 Air is 300 times thinner than a human hair, making it the first laptop that can effortlessly slice through a ham hock.
Yeah, now that's a good point about this new MacBook Air is so fucking thin that it is just as thin as a human hair. Now, I don't have any hair, but if I did, I would yank a hair out and compare it to the MacBook, and you're going to see they're both the same density, right? And this MacBook Air can slice a ham hock. Go ahead.
That was beautiful. The new micro butterfly keyboard is so light to the touch, the keys will literally turn to dust when pressed.
Do you hear that? When you touch these keys, they turn to dust. That is how, what would the word be? That is how fragile, beautiful. We all turn to dust, right? Dust to dust. Read your goddamn Bible.
Go ahead. The laser-thin speaker playback. All your audio in a frequency so high, your music will only be heard by field mice.
Field mice are the only thing that can hear your music played on the Mac. What is it called?
MacBook Air.
MacBook Air. Because the intensity, the frequency is so high. Anyway, go ahead, Steve.
The improved retina screen has 400 trillion more colors than the human eye can perceive, but will still penetrate deep into the subconscious, freeing your mind and permanently unlocking your third eye, allowing you passage into the fourth dimension. Once the fourth dimension is unlocked, you will feel the universe in a way that no non-Mac user could possibly understand. Have you tasted the blessings of the rainbow goat? You will. The 2019 MacBook Air. You can either accept that goat or be consumed by its flame.
Oh, my God. Now, I think that's just an example of a product that's so ethereal, that's so otherworldly, that it fucking hates you. Do you understand me? Because you're salt of the earth, and it is divine. And the one thing the divine can't stand is salt of the fucking earth.
Okay. But first it's going to make your life better before it hates you.
Now, we also take phone calls.
Yes,
of course. First, it's going to make your life better. And we want to thank MacBook Air for coming on the show. And we also, you know, we put this out there. We have a number for you to call if you want to say hey to the podcast, anything you want to say, talk about, compliment, critique, whatever. Our number is 424-262-0904. That number again is 424-262-0904. Let's go to a call we had, and here we go.
Steve here calling from Toronto. I'm about a third, fourth, fifth, sixth time caller, I guess, but this is my first time calling sober. Steve calling from Canada. I heard your New Year's show. Just enjoyed it like I enjoy all the other ones. And the co-host does his job right. It's very cool, like the whole thing. And I'm going to respond to something that Steve, the co-host, had said about music and talking about Mickey Mouse fucking Oprah Winfrey with Bugs Bunny's carrot or something like that. Just my two cents really on the whole topic, because I'm a musician, and really the truth really about it all is that you know, culturally music just does not have the same power or the same dominance or anything even close to what it was in the 60s, 70s and 80s. And no one cares about music. They just don't, you know. People care about Netflix movies, you know. They care about social media. They care about video games, and they care about pornography, online pornography. Those are the things that are driving the culture right now. That's kind of where we're at. So if you want to get your music heard in the world, you know, anything that even resembles what it was like in the old days, you have to, like, graft your music into somebody's stupid film or video game or a porn movie or something. It's the only way, you know, you can sort of get recognition if recognition is what you're looking for. So that's it. That's how it is. And I don't think I'll comment necessarily on that as being bad necessarily or good necessarily. That's just how it is. I know that personally for me, it affects me badly. And as far as the musicians that I know, you know, the only people it comes down to, well, why would you play music? Why would you even play music? And the people who do, the people who persevere, continue playing music are either, you know, just way, way, way gifted, you know, exceptionally, you know, Mozart, Pat Metheny, Charlie Parker level, you know, Prince level people, or the people who are just really possessed with it, you know, like the music is driving them to do it, or the people who just, like, basically do it. When I fit into this category, I just do it as an end in itself. I'm really not trying to do it to impress people or to get recognition. I do it as an end in itself, because no one's really going to give a shit about the music that I play or to hear it or anything.
Okay, he got cut off. But that was great. Steve from Canada. Thank you, by the way, Steve. You've called in a bunch, and thank you for calling in sober, because this was a great phone call. Now, it was based on your comment, which is about that there is no counterculture anymore. Say the exact quote again.
The culture has been it's had its soul fucked in the ass by Oprah Winfrey holding Mickey Mouse's dick.
And explain that again.
I don't know how to explain that.
You have to know how to explain it.
You know, there's a generation, generations removed from any kind of corporations have been stifling and smothering art and self-expression so much that there are generations that, I mean, grew up in the 80s, which was terrible political time, but the comedy and the movies were still good. And my parents were from the 60s and 70s.
Who in the 80s did influence you? 80s.
Eddie Murphy, Raw. Raw.
Keep going.
Richard Pryor, Long Beach.
In the 80s? Well, Pryor was before that,
Yeah, but for my childhood, he was still the toy.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, Tootsie. Dustin Hoffman, Tootsie. Right. We go through the Back to the Future, the Ghostbusters, Saturday Night Live,
Those comedies, like you're talking about movie comedies.
Well, some.
Now,
comics.
Have there been any good movie comedies lately? Not really, right?
No.
I mean, Kevin Hart, he's funny, but the movies aren't
the movie
funny.
Comedies that are good, like the movie comedies like The Hangover or Bridesmaid.
Yeah.
They're one time. You watch them. You don't have to see them again. That's the one thing
I
noticed.
For sure.
You don't have to see them again. They're good. The first time you see it, it's cute and fine and it's funny. But it's not something you go, I got to watch that. You know, I'm in a mood. I pull out those comedies from the 80s and even the 70s. I just think they were fewer and further between in the 70s. The movie comedies in the 80s were like spectacular.
But also I want to say that Steve's point was about music, because I think you've specifically mentioned that the music is soulless these days. And he was saying nobody gives a shit about music, which I don't agree with.
Really? What do you think people care about?
Well, I think music is huge, because it has to be, because music is the food of life and you have to play on. That was a Shakespeare quote, but music has, you know, everybody, like, you know, people relate to music immediately. It's the most visceral, you know, easiest thing to connect to. There's still huge concerts that happen all the time, right? I mean, people, you know, people are always going to see people play, fucking, you know, Spotify, Pandora.
That's true, because the girl,
Apple Music,
the girl down in, you know, he might be speaking more of his own personal experience, because the girl down that slept with me, she still goes to live concerts. And you're right. So yeah, I mean, it just, I guess it's a,
so I don't know if I agree with Steve that nobody gives a shit about music. I think what our point is, your point, my point, is that the music, it isn't fucking,
it's less relevant.
It's less relevant. It doesn't, it's corporate. A lot of it is corporate, meaning that it's just have a good time. And I've got nothing against music that's, you know, because I love to dance. You know me, I'll do some Molly and I'll be like, you know, I'll be like, purple rain. Purple rain. You know what I mean? I love music.
Can you keep doing that? Because the whole podcast should be that. I mean, you should just.
No, but I mean, what I'm saying is that music is so part, you know, I'm like, oh, yeah. Pleased to meet you. Hope you guess my name. Because that's when I was growing up, I smoked pot, which did fuck me up. You know, it ruined my life in a way, because, well, in a way it saved me, in a way it ruined my life. Isn't that interesting about drugs and alcohol? Like, in a way it saves you, because you're in an intolerable situation, at least I was, and you kind of get these insights and it allows you to persevere. But at some point it turns
out. It's not a permanent solution.
It is not a permanent solution. Hello, everybody. I'm Dan Fredericks. And this is what I have to say about drugs and alcohol. It is not a permanent solution to your problems. Because now I realize that.
But you're not, how can you know that at 19? You don't know. You just keep doing it till it doesn't work anymore.
I did it, though, till 40, because I was damaged. I remember going, she was not my first therapist, but she said to me, someone who smokes pot at the age of 14, which is when I started, is in a lot of psychic pain. And I just looked at her and said, I know.
Good.
Purple rain, purple rain. Prince, man. That's some soulful shit, huh?
Man, that's awesome. Prince was a weird guy, though. I've heard stories about his
He died of drugs.
Yeah. Oh, did he?
Yeah. He died, it was opioids, I think. What did he die of, Aaron? Fentanyl.
What the fuck is fentanyl?
You don't know what fentanyl is?
No, man, I'm out of
the
world.
Oh, dude, it's killing everybody. It's highly concentrated heroin. Yeah. Yeah.
In a pill.
It's flakes, pill. I don't know. Thankfully, that's why these days, this was a New York Times article, because that's where I'm at this point in my life. I haven't been doing drugs or alcohol for many years. And, a couple of drugs. But fentanyl, and by that I mean like anti-anxiety shit. And antidepressants I only take antidepressants. I take Zoloft. And the reason I do is I love the taste of Zoloft.
Oh, you're a purist. So.
But fentanyl is killing people. That's why if you do cocaine these days, let's say you're like feeling good, you just sold a show. Well, you're rolling the dice big time. I mean, fentanyl's been found in cocaine, and it's part of the big opioid, the story of the opioids. It's like the deadliest fucking thing, and New York Times did a big piece on fentanyl.
My buddy's a director, and he comes to town every now and again. He's just a good old friend, and he loves cocaine. I would never say his name on the air, but he loves cocaine. And
I would never say his name on the air, but I know Steve's friend, and I want to say, hi, Bob Richards. Go ahead.
Shit. Bob. So Bob and I would go out, and Bob wanted to go down to like Skid Row and get cocaine. And we would go out to go, you know, this is years ago, and we'd go out and he'd get it, and then he'd want to go to a strip club, you know? So we'd go to some seedy strip club, and
how long ago was this?
7-8 years ago. And he would have one drink and a little bit of cocaine.
Did you do it too?
No. Oh. I never did it. Because I don't have any tolerance for alcohol or drugs. I just don't. I don't crave it. It's okay. Just my, you know. So he'd do it, and then he'd be slobbering. Like, he'd have saliva dribbling out of his mouth. His speech would be slurred. He'd be, you know. And he liked getting like that. And I said.
Don't we all?
I said, Bob.
Yeah.
Is that good stuff? And he goes, oh, yeah, Steve, it's really good. And then the next day he wake up, and I go, Bob, that was good stuff, huh? He go, no, that wasn't good stuff. I think that was airplane glue.
Oh, yeah. He just wanted – well, that's the thing.
He just wanted to be taken out of reality.
Yes,
you know?
Yes. We are so pursued by voices.
I quit smoking weed. I do want to say this. I quit smoking weed. Mm-hmm. I quit smoking cigarettes when I was like about 28 or something. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have the protective layer in my lungs, so I had to – eventually I couldn't smoke weed anymore. Because I couldn't tolerate I could smoke the weed because I had the cigarettes.
It's probably good. I mean, you probably saved your lungs, right?
Might
have
saved my life, yeah.
Here's another call. Here we go.
Hey, Addie. Hey, Steve. This is Patricia from Stockton. Just saying welcome back. Glad you had a Christmas vacation. And congratulations, Steve, on the success. That's excellent. Enjoy the show. Carry on. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Patricia. Do you see how simple a message that was? That's like movie acting, what she just did. Very simplistic, like...
like a punctuation mark.
It's kinda. Just like... And a comment. So yeah. You could call us. There were two, like, diametrically opposed calls. One is, you know, bringing up all these issues, and another is just saying, hey, guys, love what you're doing, and she's congratulating...
Thank you, Patricia.
For those who are just new to the podcast, Steve had an accident. It took him a year to have any sexual relations since the accident. And he recently broke that streak, and he's back. And so if you want to leave a message, call 424-262-0904. And let's go to an ad now, Steve. I'll read. Okay. Did you read the last one?
Yeah, I read the last one.
I'll read this one. This one is Chuck's Cranberries. And it's funny that I'm reading an ad for Chuck's Cranberries because I was just in the car, was I not? Again, to the point about music. You know, we never really hold it. I just realized we never address Steve's fucking call. He said what people care about are porn and video games. Now, those two you should eliminate from your life.
Oh, Netflix shows.
And then social media and movies, Netflix movies. Even though me and you are criticizing movies, like the comedies are just not that funny anymore, you know? It seems like the platforms like Netflix, this is what's really, like people have been craving stuff that isn't network for a long time. That's why HBO exploded. You know, all these, you know, platforms. I like using the word platform because I know how to speak to you people. You know, all these platforms that allow people to take chances in creating shows and talk about stuff you can't talk about network TV. Like, you know, you're talking about getting basically depressed watching Friends, of course. Like, if I watch any network stuff, it's like what happens is you get dumbed down. Like, how does dumbing down happen when you just expose yourself to it and, you know, turn yourself off and that shit comes in? Even though I'd have to say that Modern Family is a well-written comedy and it's got some... I like that you reacted like that.
I might pass out. That was so unexpected.
I know, we are at the end of days of the American Empire.
But Modern Family.
But Modern Family is very funny. Oh, God.
Oh, shit. Oh.
No, it's super well written as a comedian. I like respect that. But like after watching it, you're sort of like, get the fuck out of here with these phony fucking relationships and how much this family loves each other. That's a thing that's a little annoying on network TV is all the families really love each other. Hey, Aaron, how long have we gone so far? I want to.
41.
Okay. So now that's interesting, too, that Steve mentioned that fucking porn.
Mm-hmm.
Is what people care about. And I would say men far more than women, right? Even though women get addicted to porn too.
I don't know. That would be a good thing to find out. We should do some research on that.
And
find out if women, I don't know any women.
No, I think it's definitely true. It affects them too. But men just fucking, you know, that, like, here's the thing about porn. It is an example. Or like the porn that is popular now, it's all about power. It's all about domination.
Power fucking.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's all about degrading women. You know, the straight porn. It's all about degrading women and making them objects. And that's what happens in the end stages of capitalism is everything gets turned into a fucking thing, into a commodity. It's like, people are thrown to the fucking dogs. You make iPhones in China, you know, and those workers throw themselves off fucking buildings. They had to put netting around buildings so they could make our iPhones. I have one right here. This iPhone, I think, it wouldn't that be wild if each iPhone said 35 people died to make this iPhone, and it had their names listed and how they killed themselves.
Would be also dystopian.
Modern Family is a great show. Go ahead.
A really even darker comic observation would be this many people died making the netting.
Why is the netting so dangerous to make? Because it's a tangled web we weave. Let me read it. But porn is just, and dude, I'm not saying I don't, like, I have watched a lot of that shit, and it's like an addiction, and I'd stop watching it because it feeds a very dark place.
Yeah.
It feeds a very dark place, and it's just.
It's sad, though.
It's super sad.
Because.
It's not as sad as Friends. But it's
it
sad.
Doesn't make me feel as bad as Friends, but I don't watch Friends as often as I watch porn. But for a year, all I could do was watch other people have sex.
But it feeds, doesn't it feed just this, because everything is objectified, it's just so, it's just so
horrible.
It's
sad, man. It's sad. It's a sad, it's just the surface. The porn is just the surface of what's going on.
What I hate is the machismo of like, straight guys who are like, I fucking love porn. And, you know, I go in there, I get it, and I'm out, you know? And yeah. Like, it's just like.
Well, there's not as much of a conscience going on with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean.
It's just hyper masculinity. You know what hyper masculinity is? Hyper masculinity is a sign of the culture we live in, which is dominated. Our culture is just a reflection of, you know, what's going on. Like our military, the Pentagon just bombs other countries. And I don't know if I finished this point, but we're fucking, you know, the biggest blunder in U.S. history was invading Iraq and killing, you know, all these poor people, Iraqi civilians. There was no connection. This is the point of Vice, too. There was no connection ever made.
To terrorism.
You know, they wanted it for oil. And now the Mideast is completely destabilized. ISIS, by the way, vicious terrorist group, was created by us. But now we have an ad from Chuck's Cranberries. I think it's just a good time to go into Chuck's Cranberries. Chuck's Cranberries would like you to know that although the federal government shutdown has basically crippled the FDA, at Chuck's, there is no poop on their cranberries. I mean, that's been a big problem. I mean, there's no oversight now on a lot of farms because of the government shutdown, and they're finding all kinds of fecal matter in a lot of, you know, produce. I mean, I bit into some romaine lettuce the other day, and it was like eating the ass out of a large person. Other farms may have been, by the way, please watch Modern Family. Other farms may have been praying for the chance to cover their less delicious cranberries with poop, but only Chuck's gives you a 74% no human poop guarantee on every bag of delicious cranberries. That's a nice guarantee. Let's face it, we have all seen pictures of cranberries in a bog and thought, man, I'll bet I could fit a dozen of those cranberries in my anus. Well, not Chuck. He nor any member of his staff would dream of covering a small bowl of red delights with a damp cloth, placing them into a microwave, setting it on low for 45 seconds, wringing a single ice cube around the rim of their anus before gently pushing each slippery marble beyond the brown veil. Not one member of his staff ever considered the forbidden delights of stuffing one's own rectum with cranberries, only to launch them at a playmate, machine gun style, during an office holiday party at a local Chili's. Rest assured that when you bite into one of Chuck's cranberries, the only tartness you taste is fresh cranberries. Suck on Chuck's cranberries today. And I think the point is, you know, and the point that was made is that Chuck's staff is vetted. It's vetted because a lot of people
just shoot cranberries out of their ass.
Well, a lot of people are just what we're talking about with porn is they want to feed their dark side.
Right. And what's sad is that there are people out there who can shoot cranberries out their ass at each other, and most of us are still alone.
Mm-hmm. We have one more ad. Could you read it?
Tennessee Tar, Eddie, is a small batch of vegan soda.
Oh, welcome aboard, Tennessee Tar, and welcome aboard Chuck's Cranberries, and welcome aboard MacBook Air. Yeah. I mean, we have a lot of new sponsors this week.
Man, we're doing really good. Our numbers are up.
Mm. We still haven't received any money. Which means me and Steve have to service people behind dumpsters in Encino.
We were in Reseda, and now we're in Encino. But anyway,
please send us money. You could PayPal me.
Venmo.
I don't like Venmo. You could PayPal me at epepitone@sbcglobal.net. PayPal me money.
Yeah.
epepitone@sbcglobal.net.
Or you can send us money through Facebook at Eddie Pepitone's personal page. Or
yeah, I'll
Stephen
read that
Lally,
to you later.
If you want to.
No, send it to me. Don't send it a Lolly. I'll give it a Lolly if you send it to me.
Tennessee Tar is a small batch vegan soda company located in picturesque Crossville, Tennessee. Have you been to Crossville, Tennessee, Eddie?
I have not. I've only been in Nashville.
Oh, okay.
I did a comedy.
Oh, Crossville was where the big massacre of 1972 occurred.
You serious?
No, I'm not. Since its founding in 1873, Tennessee Tar has been the artist's choice in pure brown tar heroin-flavored soda. Many of the greats praise the amazing creative elixir Tennessee Tar for making them famous. Jazz legend Lazy Luke Webster famous.
Lazy Luke Webster. Mm-hmm. You know, the great thing about Lazy Luke, I remember the thing about him was that he was a great musician, but a lot of times he'd be too lazy to make the gig. And so you'd be waiting for Lazy Luke, and he'd just be on his couch.
Yeah.
And he'd be like, no, I'm not a coming there today. I'm just going to sit here eating this scone.
Lazy Luke famously vomited the first four stanzas of How High the Moon through a child's alto sax as the police were dragging him out of that grade school recital. He screamed, Tennessee Tar is the haps, a phrase that also adorns his tombstone. American novelist Dighams Brown wrote a 35 chapters of his classic, The Days That Night Forgot, using only a broken bottle of Tennessee Tar and a clouder of stray cats. Although his book was never formally published, his last words were, Tennessee Tar is the haps. He got the chair twice. Tennessee Tar doesn't have an official slogan, but it does have the great taste of delicious Tennessee brown tar heroin. Order a case today. The link's in the description. Rate us on iTunes, subscribe on YouTube, and like us on SoundCloud. Tennessee Tar, we love you.
Okay, thank you, Tennessee Tar, for coming aboard.
Yeah.
What is Tennessee Tar? It's just heroin?
It's heroin-flavored soda for
it's
vegans.
It's heroin-flavored soda yeah. for vegans.
River Phoenix was a big advocate of...
Ooh, River Phoenix. He died...
Of heroin, and he was a vegan.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah.
He died at... was he a vegan?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, when they asked him, do you do heroin, he said, I don't even eat meat.
Yeah, that was tragic, though. He died at the Viper Club.
Yeah, right outside. Yep.
The way you're saying it, you're like, I didn't like him.
Let him in.
I just got a couple of emails. One, Kyle Greenfell just subscribed to us on YouTube. Subscribe to us on YouTube. We do this live on YouTube. You could watch. And Matt Rasamoto, who writes all the ads. Thank you, Matt. He wrote the Tennessee Tar. He wrote
MacBook Air.
He wrote Chuck's Cranberries. So blame him is what I'm saying. And Matt, has posted all these back episodes, all of our episodes that we've filmed on YouTube. So go to YouTube, check us out. You know, subscribe to us, maybe we can make some money so we don't have to go to Encino and do unspeakable things.
Oh, man.
Unspeakable things to toothless men and women.
Marms. Toothless marms.
Oh, God. I had a service a few monks the other day. It was horrible. Anyway, I just got an email, too, from SAG-AFTRA, my union, and it says, Dear Eddie, the middle class is under attack. Not kidding. And across the country, unions are standing strong against this assault. No, they're not. No, they're not, SAG-AFTRA. Fucking, there's only a few unions left, and they're not standing strong. The LA teachers, we never mentioned this today.
Oh, but they're on strike.
Yeah, Los Angeles Unified teachers are on strike, and let's fucking support them. And then they're saying companies like advertising agency Bartle Boggle Hegarty Incorporated, who place profits over people, threaten the very survival of performers who rely on union wages and benefits to feed and care for their families. BBH has illegally abandoned its contract with the SAG-AFTRA and their responsibility to pay performers fairly. So there's an advertising company. I don't fucking do commercials, so that's how I fucking do that, you know? SAG-AFTRA wants all these actors to be the spokesperson for the corporations that are killing us, and they don't see anything wrong with
really?
That. Any actor who's fucking doing commercials, this is what I hate about so-called Hollywood, and this to me describes the Hollywood liberal. Look at Thomas Middleditch. Right? I'm sure Middleditch considers himself a liberal. You know who I'm talking about? The guy who does the Verizon campaign. He got big on Silicon Valley.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm talking about Hollywood celebs who go and do commercials, you know? And they are fucking the spokesperson for corporations.
The worst are the bank people. The
Capital One, Samuel Jackson, Alec Baldwin. That's a Hollywood liberal in a nutshell, Alec Baldwin. Let me be the spokesperson for Capital One.
Right.
And then I'm going to tell you what a shithead Trump is. But here's the thing. You can't have it both ways. You can't be a spokesperson for banks and financial institutions that are the people that prop up this system that completely fucks the working man.
It's got to come apart. The whole thing has that.
It is coming apart.
It has to come apart.
It is coming apart, and it's going to be a horrible, horrible collapse. And it's already collapsed, like we got into a little bit. Did you ever finish the story about Ruskin, Florida? I mean, half the country is in poverty. I read a thing. I forget where I read it, but it said something like 60% of Americans or more couldn't come up with $400 in an emergency these days. I mean, that's. That's the greatest country on earth. That's the one of the wealthiest, if not the wealthiest country on earth.
Not anymore.
No, not anymore.
I mean, not it's got to cut. But there is, I think there's a huge left. We're not supposed to know it. That's my, from my experience.
By left, if you mean people
I mean
who are.
Older white people. My audiences were older white people, mm-hmm. A lot of redneck, a lot of sports bars. And they would listen to jokes.
A lot of those people, though, they get hoodwinked by the right wing. And there's such a viciousness, you know. I'm reading a book now that I recommend to everybody called, are you ready for this? Are you ready for this? This should be, here it is. Hold on, folks.
Oh, the one in the car.
Age of Anger, A History of the Present by Pangash Mishra, an Indian fella, and it's great. It's fucking great. Aaron, what are we up to minute-wise? 56. Okay, we're wrapping up. So Age of Anger, and what I was going to say is that these people who are angry, meaning, you know, these corporations have left their fucking cities, Scranton, Pennsylvania, which has to sell their water supplies to private companies. The largest prison population in the world is here in the United States, and corporations use prisoners
as slave labor.
You know what? Look, here's the bottom line about America is we built the country on a genocide of Native American Indians, and then we not built it but founded the country on a genocide and built it on the backs of slaves and the bill.
But
bill is here.
Most empires were. I mean,
but that doesn't make it any better. No. I don't give a fuck.
No, I'm just saying it was not just
that'd be
here.
Funny if you were the we have from the left Eddie Pepitone and from kind of the left Steve Lolly. But most empires were built on that, Bob. No, you know what I mean.
I do. But I'm just saying we weren't the only one.
Are you feeling guilty about it? I want to tell everybody, thank you for listening and watching. If you watched on YouTube, I don't respect you. That's one thing I want to get out. I do not respect you. Rate us on iTunes. The engineers on our show is Emma Erdbrink and Aaron Brungart. Aaron's here today. Producer Matt Rossomato. Leave a message for us at 424-262-0904. Email me at epepitone@sbcglobal.net. If you like the show, fucking send me a PayPal thing. epepitone@sbcglobal.net. Facebook, you can find me at fb.me/pepitonefans. Facebook, fb.me/pepitonefans. YouTube, pepitonepodcast.com. That's it. You want to plug anything?
Oh, Stevie? Yeah. I'm going to be at the Wine Cave tomorrow night.
It's tomorrow night?
Yeah.
Boy, that shit comes fast.
I know. Yeah.
Where is the Wine Cave?
It's in Montrose, California, which I think is by Glendale. I've never been there.
I'll be at Cobb's Comedy Club in San Francisco, January 22nd. Will Durst show.
Yeah.
Part of the San Francisco Sketch Fest. And taping a new special at the Dynasty Theater. Steve will be at the Wine Cave tomorrow night near Montrose?
Yeah. In Montrose, near...
In Montrose.
In beautiful... Downtown.
Where is fucking Montrose?
Somewhere by Glendale. I've never...
Oh, really? Oh, it's not that far away. Good. I thought you were heading...
No, it's like north of Glendale.
Baby, we're driving to the wine cave. I want 7 cans of whipped cream. I just want to snort the whipped cream on the way there. GPS, I want jerky in the car. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to Pep Talks. Thanks, Steve.
Yeah. Oh, are we done?
Yep.
All right. See you guys.
Bye.